So last week we, in our satsang together, we introduced something that actually Swami has been talking about since last summer, the new renunciate order, and we tried to go into it more deeply and talk about the ramifications that it has in our life as a community and for us as individuals. What we'll be talking about tonight is a little more clarification of going a little more deeply into certain aspects. I'll start with that. And then Jyotish will talk about how this renunciate order really affects the outreach that Ananda does in Ananda's mission at this point in time. And we also will be having just previews of coming attractions. We're going to ordain Peggy Grady as a minister before she leaves for Portland in a week or two. So we'll do that at the end of the evening. So in the last week since we last met, a number of things have happened to sort of clarify and develop these themes. First of all, we found out on Monday, 2 days ago, that Swamiji would like some people to come over, and he wants to have the initiation in Assisi a week from Friday, November 20th. So people will be coming. There'll be about 18 people that are coming from India, America, and there are some people in Assisi as well. And this will be the first wave. People asked the question last week, and it was something that wasn't clarified in the original book. How does one become or take the step of becoming a Tyagi or a Brahmachari? And Swami said people need to understand, first of all, for both the Tyaga stage and the Nayaswami stage, people need to apply. It's not that they will be sought out. So you need to apply. For the Tyaga stage, Swami suggests that you go to a Nayaswami who you respect and feel comfortable with, and you need to be approved by one Nayaswami. And as we mentioned last week, to become a Nayaswami, you need to be approved by three others. So the new aspect there is that for everyone, it's necessary to apply to join this new renunciate order. So a week from Friday, as I said, the initiation will be happening. It'll be, Jyotish and I will be flying over on Wednesday and arriving Thursday, driving to Assisi that night. The initiation is on Friday between either 5 o'clock or 8 o'clock. Swami hadn't decided yet. But one thing I would like to suggest, it's rare that we find support for our spiritual life from PG&E. But in fact, this is what's happening right now, because next Thursday, PG&E, we're going to have a power outage. They're doing some upgrading on the system. So everybody who works at a desk job or uses power tools or their job depends on electricity, there's not going to be any power on Thursday. Now, this is the day before the initiation. So I would like to suggest that if you find yourself unable to perform your normal activities, that we take this as a community seclusion day and retreat day and really go within, really meditate, really try to tune in as much as you can to what's going on in the broader work with this very significant step. And Peter Goering, who comes from good Germanic stock, said, if you want to trade that day off on Thursday and come in on Saturday, you could do that too. So we'll leave that up to your personal discretion. But in any case, I really would recommend having Thursday be a day of community retreat. And we might even extend the morning meditation and make it be a 3-hour meditation. It's a nice way we can all feel united in these efforts. The satsang that we would be giving next Wednesday, we will be somewhere in space at that time, so we won't be here. And then we'll also be arriving back on the following Wednesday. So we're going to postpone it till December 2nd. And at that time, we'll be able to share more about what happened in Assisi. So I think that'll be really significant. Okay, I think that's kind of the business at hand.
I think so.
Okay. What I would like to do now, we went over this last week, but I know many of you have told me, and I too resonate with this, that you've been reading these 14 points that Swami mentioned as sort of the criterion for taking this stage in your life. And I'd like collectively to explore these more. And because since we each need to apply for this step, or if you feel like you're not at the stage, it gives you a goal to shoot for, gives you a target. And so I'd like to read them. And as I went over them more and more, I saw they sort of configured themselves into different groupings, which really can be our guidelines for our next spiritual or stages of spiritual development. So Swamiji says, it's one page only, what I propose to do here is to open the path of renunciation to all those, whether married or single, who deeply yearn to know God. What then are the marks of those whom I'd consider worthy of being accepted as true renunciates? They would be those who have achieved noteworthy progress toward the attainment of the following virtues. Okay, the first category, the first four, fall under the heading of non-attachment and even-mindedness. And he describes it this way. Last week, someone asked the question, making a suggestion that one of the words be changed. And I answered rather abruptly, and afterwards I felt a little bad about that. But Swami has chosen his words very, very carefully. It's not a matter of semantics here. It's a matter of deep thought and deep living a life for 60 years that has brought him to a stage of deep inner renunciation. So the first four, as I say, non-attachment and even-mindedness. The first one, these would be characteristics of these of people who have achieved noteworthy progress. One, they have no or very few attachments or desires. Now, one of the criteria for us to really make the best use of what Swami's giving us is deep self-honesty. So if you say, you know, I really do still feel like I want to develop a career. I really do feel like I'd like to develop my, I don't know, financial security because other people are dependent on me. And if it's a non-attached desire, that's one thing. But looking within ourselves honestly, do we still feel that we have things that are important for us to play out in the world? Do you feel, and this is such a personal thing, nobody else can decide that for you. You have to go within and say, do I feel free in my heart of pretty much of sexual desire? Do I feel in my heart pretty much free from wanting a sense of this and that? And if you see areas where there still are things like, no, I still need to work on that, then look at it and work on it. Don't beat yourself up about it, but just say, these are guidelines. As they say, they're targets to move towards. I was talking with someone today, and she made a very interesting comment, and I found it very, very insightful and profound. She said, Swamiji takes his responsibility towards us so deeply and so profoundly that what he's doing while he is still in the body is giving us the highest mark we can shoot for. Even if it seems a little bit beyond what we feel comfortable with. Because after he goes, it will be very easy just to say, you know, I'm kind of comfortable the way I am. And so in his sense of responsibility, it was such an interesting way to put it, because he's not doing this to make us jump from through hoops. He's not doing this. He's doing it as a gift to all of us, to help us reach out for what we can become. And I'm reading a very interesting book now, which I highly recommend. It was first recommended by Usha. It's called The Garden of Invention, and it's a biography of Luther Burbank. And the woman who writes it really gets the fact that Burbank was a remarkable soul. But there's something in there that I found the most interesting of all. She said Burbank explained his ability to make these profound changes in plants, to bring out the best in them. He said there are either latent strengths that haven't yet come out, or virtues that have yet to be expressed. And the way he would bring them out was essentially to stress the plant. He would graft it, weaken it in some way, and that would prompt it. It would make it respond by digging deep for some latent strength, some latent quality, or to express a new virtue that hadn't yet been expressed yet. And I thought, my golly, that's the guru-disciple relationship. To put us under stress. I mean, that's what Swamiji says in The Path, how Master would deal with people. He would take you to the breaking point to see which way you would break. And that's the guru-disciple relationship. And what Swami's doing with us now is saying, okay, guys, you're kind of comfortable. There's a lot of parts of your life that are just going along pretty nicely, but I'm going to stress the system and just see what comes out. And so with self-honesty, to look at yourself and say, no, there are still areas that I need, that I feel desired towards, and don't think, oh, I'm a terrible devotee, I'm this and that. No, just to say, this is an area that I have to work on. The second point in this first category, those who have achieved noteworthy progress are without anger. In the Bhagavad Gita, there's this wonderful description where it says, from attachment springs desire, from desire springs anger, from anger springs loss of knowledge of our true self, and from loss of knowledge of our true self is forgetfulness of God. It's just a progression. It's one of the most famous passages in the Gita. So look at your own life. Look at those areas where you get angry. It's because I'm not speaking to you, I'm speaking to myself. Just today I was scrambling some eggs and I spilled the thing all over me and I started using language which wasn't very good. And I thought, well, why are you doing that? Because I was frustrated because I was trying to be in a hurry and go somewhere. My desire was to do this. And so just to say, look at where you get angry and trace it back. Where's the frustrated desire in that? And again, work on that. Try to lose the ego involvement with that area. The third principle in this one is they are without prejudice, whatever life gives them. And they live by the principle, what comes of itself, let it come. Even-mindedness. And again, it's all tied up with these four, with attachment to specific desires. If there isn't attachment, what God gives, we take. I remember after the fire, 75, Swami came back after the fire and we were, you know, kind of in a state of, shall we say, disarray. And he looked at me and I was kind of, I don't know, stunned, in a state of shock 2 days after the fire. And he looked at me and he just said, how are you, Davy? Well, that's good. And he just walked on, you know. And without a chance to answer. But then later, he wrote me a little card. And he said, I'm so sorry for all the suffering that you all have had to go through during this time. But always remember, what God gives, we take. And, you know, in retrospect, it was such a blessing for all the individuals involved and for the community. But again, if there's not the expectation, it should be this way. You know, we, for those of you who haven't looked at it, we posted a new Sangha newsletter, and Jyotish and I wrote part of it, but there are some really, really other very interesting parts. There's a letter from Dr. Aditya in India, fascinating letter, wonderful. And there's a little clip of an old talk that Swami gave, Coping with Change. And I was sort of, you know, looking at all the different components and how it came together. And he said the most interesting thing that I've heard him say how many times without number, but it went in. And he said, whatever is changing around you, and we could raise our hands right now and say, who's having some change in their life right now, you know, and there wouldn't be a hand that wouldn't go up. He said, whatever change is going on around you, don't identify with it, but only remain centered in the self. And again, it's the same concept. What comes of itself, let it come, because it doesn't define us. It's the same advice Swami gave to people who were diagnosed with a terminal illness or a serious illness. He would always say, don't identify yourself with that disease. And so, you know, that's how we find freedom. It's just whatever's going on around us, we're centered in ourself, even-minded and non-attachment. And the last one in this category, they never seek to justify or defend themselves, but accept all judgment by others dispassionately as experiences given them by God for their higher good. Well, that's a hard one. How often if we're criticized, we say, yeah, but she didn't understand. No, I didn't really say that. You know, and if you only knew my side of the story. But just whatever comes, they're all variations on that same theme. Just let it be. You don't need to justify. You don't need to defend. It just is what it is. As Master says, I am what I am before my conscience and God. Praise does not make me better. Blame does not make me less. So you can see how these first four, they all begin untying the knot that's tied to the post of ego. And they're so simple. They're such simple statements. But the results are freedom. The next category, I would call it a life centered in God. And these are simple and beautiful ones. The first one, this is number 5. They keep in their hearts primarily the company of God. And you know, we can be with people, we can be inwardly connected with God. We can be all by ourselves in a cell, in a monastery, and be thinking of God, be thinking of all the things of the world. Ananda Moima once said to a friend of ours, who a disciple of hers, she said, better to be in the world and long for the ashram than to be in the ashram and long for the world. And so primarily to keep the company of God. When you're alone, be inwardly chanting, inwardly doing a mantra, inwardly sharing, oh, Master, look, we're having pasta for lunch. We like pasta. That's nice. And when you're with other people, even though you're engaged with them, just still remember that your true friend, your true companion is God. The second one in this category, life centered in God, be indifferent to the opinions of others. So you just walk through life, just again, untouched by people's reactions, just knowing that God is the judge of your life, not other people's opinions, because they don't understand. And the world may totally misunderstand our intentions. And we may totally understand our intentions, but God doesn't misunderstand our intentions. You know, we mentioned last week that there was this film crew that came out, and actually was at a Sunday service several weeks ago. And they were doing interviews. They were doing a movie about the life of the legacy of Yogananda. And they were interviewing primarily Swamiji, but a few other people. And at the end of the interview, they asked each one of us, If you could be looking right at Master now, what would you say? And, just on the spot like that, you had to kind of respond. And it was a very good.